Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. My name is Mark Shiver. It's Friday, and that means we're going to talk to our good friend Tim Boyum. He is the anchor of Capital Tonight at the Time Warner Cable News Channel, and Tim is as dialed in as anybody when it comes to politics and state government, things that are going on, whether it be on Jones Street or Blunt Street, the governor, the General Assembly. Tim Boyum is dialed in, and it's always a pleasure to speak with him every Friday right here on What Matters in North Carolina. And without any further ado, why don't we do just that and talk to Tim Boyum. Every Friday, it's our great pleasure to talk with Tim Boyum. He is the anchor of Capital Tonight on the Time Warner Cable News Channel. Tim, welcome back, sir.
It's always a pleasure to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, so they're back, you know, and I don't know if the poltergeist "they're back" is appropriate or not, but the General Assembly has reconvened in earnest, and I'd love to have your initial thoughts.
Well, you hate to say it was a slow start because they really did just start on Wednesday, but they really are, you know, it appears they're just going to sort of ease into the legislative session here in 2017. You know, there's talk that they want to tweak potentially a classroom size issue where they reduce class sizes, but districts are having problems with it. That's the one thing they want to, you know, maybe take up quickly. They need to get it done by March, according to some school districts. But, you know, other than that, there's not much urgency to do anything significant from what I hear. So we'll just have to see. Obviously, the confirmation hearings for the governor's nominees for cabinets will probably happen sooner than later, so that might be what we sort of, you know, see in the headlines before much else.
Well, speaking of the governor, we haven't heard a lot from him. I guess the breakfast that he was at a couple of days ago, he made some comments about corporate tax cuts and kind of smacked them a little bit, and felt like that was taken away from education funding or something. But what do you hear as far as have you heard? As far as the relationship that is developing between the governor and the folks at the General Assembly, are they going to play nice, or is there still a good bit of acrimony there?
You know, I think there's both, and it's a little bit mixed depending on who you talk to. I talked to Sarah Stevens this week. She's House Speaker Pro Tem. She got a call from Roy Cooper right after he won, but she hasn't heard from him since. The majority leader in the House, John Bell, had not heard from him. They have since sat down. They have had a face-to-face meeting. Just yesterday, I had the chance to talk with Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger, who most assume is the most powerful politician in the state. He says they have each other's cell phone numbers. They've met in person twice, and they've probably talked on the phone five or six times. What's interesting, though, is that they say, you know, we really want to work together, and there's certain things that we can but, you know, we'll fight when we need to. And, you know, we see that. You know, you mentioned the remarks that Governor Cooper made yesterday. And right after yesterday afternoon, there was a stern statement from Senator Berger. So I will be very curious to see if they can, you know, be very forceful against each other in public on issues, you know, like HB2, Medicaid expansion, other issues. And then whether they really can work together on some of the other issues where they do have common ground, potentially, whether it's, you know, education spending, teacher pay, et cetera. I think that remains to be seen. But politically, they seem to be saying the right things, but the evidence, you know, will be forthcoming, I'm sure.
So you talked about the start that they got off to. I was looking yesterday, and there was 20 or so, I guess, bills that were filed in the House and a few less than that in the Senate, at least by the time I had looked, and they were, you know, a nice bevy of local bills that are of no real statewide consequence. But when do you think we'll start seeing the meat, you know, the controversial stuff? The, you know, you can carry a gun anywhere you want to, anytime, any place, you know, that sort of stuff. The abortion, the, you know, the stuff that you and I get to talk about.
I mean, that's a great question. You always have to take these filings with a grain of salt in some ways, because, as you know, any lawmaker can file a bill. Getting it heard in committee and getting it sent to the floor is a whole other story.
Right.
Now, some of those bills that will never have a chance do make news because they're filed and, you know, et cetera. If you take them for their word, leadership seems to be more interested in just sort of trimming around the edges, so to speak. The budget's going to be the biggest deal. They're going to, you know, try to do something for teachers. We keep hearing that. But they're not going to make major changes. They want to put some more money back in savings. There is going to be a surplus of some sort. So what happens with that? But, you know, whether it's House Speaker Pro Tem Sarah Stevens or Senate President Pro Tem Phil Berger, they don't seem to be have an appetite, I guess would be a better phrase, for some major legislation, whether it be taxes or whatever else, or social issues, as you mentioned. But it is a long session. They have an election next year. They don't know what that's going to look like with Donald Trump and, you know, the party in power in a midterm election. Demographics seem to speak toward in the next 4 years, likely, that it could get a supermajority taken away potentially. And there's a natural swing with that, and evidently one would think anyway. So one would think this would be a year prime for some sort of major bill. And they're not going to telegraph that for me. You know they're not going to. They're not going to telegraph that in the media. So I don't know is the answer to that. But they are at least saying on the face of it, they don't see any kind of major, you know, controversial legislation out there. But one would think it'd be surprising if you didn't see something like that.
Well, I was a little disappointed because Representatives Dollar and Hardister filed a bill, which is in this session, House Bill 2. And it's not controversial at all, Tim. It's you know, it's actually a pretty good bill. I think if a first responder dies in the line of duty, their surviving spouse doesn't have to pay property tax. And it's a novel idea and interesting. But, you know, we can't argue about that.
Well, you have to wonder if there was a debate going on about who was going to, quote-unquote, have to have House Bill 2. It is actually surprising to me that they did use House Bill 2 as a vehicle for a bill that I think will likely see support, obviously. And so in some ways it's surprising. You know, you thought maybe they put a throwaway bill in their House Bill 2 so it did not get confused, particularly one that I think, you know, like you mentioned, is going to probably get some widespread support. So I don't know. You know, maybe they should have made a memorial for House Bill 2 and always just made it, you know, something every year, year and out, so it was not a bill that got debated. But, you know, people got confused by the magistrate's bill on the Senate side, too, because that was SB 2, that it was still in the court system. So I think forever it will be a confused bill. But, I am surprised that they used a bill that they think is important as a vehicle that will be called HB 2.
Yeah, well, you know, the next time there's election, you know, the opponents can so-and-so supported HB2, you know, and they don't have to clarify.
Well, every 2 years, there will be a new HB2.
Oh, Lord, this stuff is, you can't make this stuff up. So we think that the budget will be, obviously, the governor goes first. How long do you think it will take him? Governor McCrory used to take him a fair bit of time. Do you think that Governor Cooper will be quicker with his rolling out of the budget, or do you think he'll take some more time?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it takes a little bit of time. I mean, don't forget they got a slow start based on, you know, the drawn-out election process.
Right.
And so his budget director was not named until later. Now, you know, Charlie Bruce has experience, obviously, as being a budget director for Beverly Perdue, and he was sort of the budget director for the UNC system. So he's not coming in cold here. But obviously they're getting documents for an administration that they particularly did not agree with. So one would think they're going to almost start from scratch. You know, will we see it late February, early March? I think we might. You know, he's still got to do his state of the state. He still has to technically be asked by the state legislature to do that, but one would assume that's going to come. So I don't know. As you mentioned, you know, Governor McCrory had gone late from time to time, but I think everyone's hopeful we'll see one in February or March. And I do think there's some probably internal discussion about how to do a budget. You know, it's how serious is the Republican-dominated legislature going to take it? But I think, you know, Roy Cooper's done this before, so I think he's going to want to do a realistic budget. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But I don't think we're going to see it. I don't think it's imminent by any stretch of imagination.
Yeah, that would be kind of funny if they did not invite him to do a State of the State.
Yeah, although I don't think that would play well politically necessarily for the Republicans at the end of the day. But, you know, I guess it's always possible.
I say funny, only funny to people like me and you, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's the fun of being in the position we're in, that we can say that.
Well, I think that there is certainly going to be a lot of difference in the terms of characters that are on display. I'm wondering how long it'll be before Senator Berger really wishes that Senator Apodaca were still here, and Senator Rucho, some of those nice floor fights that they used to have with Senator Blue and those guys. From what you know of Senator Rabin, is he going to be a capable rules chair in the same cut from the same cloth as Apodaca?
Well, first of all, I think we saw Senator Berger probably miss Senator Apodaca in a special session.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think it would have probably looked a lot different. I'm not saying the outcome might have been different, but I think it would have looked a lot different. You know, I don't know Senator Rabin very well, to be honest with you. I will tell you, I don't think Senator Berger and Jim Blaine would have sort of made that happen and if they weren't confident in it. You know, I don't know of anything why he wouldn't be as far. You know, look, I mean, he's going to be serving at the will of his boss, essentially, the Senate President pro tem. I know
sure.
These are caucus positions and whatnot, but, you know, so, you know, he's going to be a vehicle for Senator Berger and the leadership and that staff. So, you know, I think he will serve that same purpose. He's not afraid to speak his mind. So, you know, I think that will fall in line with Senator Apodaca. Senator Apodaca was not a major fan of the media, despite, you know, being, you know, pretty well spoken on his behalf, I think. And I think Senator Rabin will probably fall in line with that as well, just, you know, my assumption. So I don't know if we'll see a major change or not. There's a lot of new faces in the legislature, including on the House side. There's going to be new, you know, chief of staff for the House Speaker as well, too. So, you know, everybody's talking about the governor's office and how that's going to interact with the legislature. There are a lot of new faces in leadership within the legislature as well. And so I think that could contribute to sort of a slow start as well. And that's not meant in a negative way. It's just, you know, they kind of have to feel each other out and see how things are going to go. And I think each side's going to test each other and see how they respond. And I think that's natural in the political sphere. People don't always like to see that, but I think it's natural.
Yeah. Well, you bring up a good point. And frankly, it's one that I had not really thought of until just now, which is why you're the television anchor and I'm not. But aside from the fact that you look much better in a bow tie, but the personalities within the General Assembly that will have to begin to interact with one another. You know, for my short history down there, it's always been, you know, Jim Blaine and some of the same other people. Apodaca and those guys, and but you're right, the Speaker of the House has a new chief of staff, a new communications director, and Jim Blaine is still there, who I'm of the opinion pretty much runs the place anyway, but this should be interesting.
There are those that will agree with you for sure.
The dynamics should be interesting. They really should.
Well, there's no question about that. And how strong of a role will the new chief of staff play? You know, how big of a role will Sarah Stevens play as the new House Speaker pro tem? I get the sense that she definitely wants to, and I think she's going to play a multifaceted role. You know, that Speaker pro tem position has had different roles over the years, and I do think she's going to take a broader leadership role with that position perhaps than some of the Speaker pro tem have in the past. And don't forget, John Bell's a majority leader. This is going to be his first real full term as majority leader. And I think he's going to assert himself as well. And then, as you mentioned, over in the Senate, they have a new finance chair, which is obviously a very important position. They have a new rules chair. And people are shifting around in some of the other committees because of, you know, de facto domino effect of moving around. So, yeah, there's no question about that. And now that it appears they won't have elections in 2017, I think they're sitting back and saying, look, we have time to do some of this. And to sort it out. I don't get the feeling, though, that they want to stay long or longer because there may not be elections. But, you know, even in election years, we saw in Tom Tillis's last, you know, year, even when you want to leave, sometimes the issues and disagreements keep you there whether you want to or not.
You know, Tim, I was surprised, and I don't mean this in any kind of negative way at all, but I was surprised to see Senator Brock move over to finance. He's always been very good at other things, and I, you know, I'm not in any way saying he can't do that or is not up to the task. I was just surprised. Were you?
Yes and no. You know, Senator Brock's an ambitious person. He believes in what he believes. I think he's always wanted to be a strong voice. Even when he's in the minority party, you know, he spoke and debated quite a bit on the floor. And finance, is a very powerful committee. It can help lead the tax debate. It can help lead debate on, you know, spending for the state. And that might have been his best avenue, particularly now. I don't know the very close, intimate details of the dynamics I don't want to say rivalries, but, you know, a path to leadership and what his ultimate goal is. But I think he wants to be a strong voice and have a large impact. And so that might have been his best avenue, and that might have been what he pushed for. You just never know what's going on in those caucus meetings behind closed doors as much as we'd like to.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. And I think he'll do a good job. It's interesting to me that the talk about the personalities, though. You've got Brock, who is not known as a boisterous sort. But then you've got Senator Tommy Tucker and Senator Jerry Tillman, who, you know, they both have cracked a joke or two in their day. And so personality-wise, I just think that might turn out to be some interesting committee meetings to be a part of
sideshow. And think about the negotiations between the chambers on that, because Jason Stane leads the finance on the House side, and he's quite a personality himself. And he had to deal with Rucho in the past, Senator Bob Rucho from Mecklenburg County, who's now retired.
Exactly.
But, you know, they've had some interesting battles over the time, too. And so those finance debates between the chambers will be fascinating as well. And that's obviously very important, as I think the legislature, even if it's nibbling, they will nibble around on the tax system and whatnot. And so finance will play a key role in that.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. You know, most people, Tim, you know, probably would not in any way, shape, or form want to sit through a committee meeting. And there have been some that I've been in where, you know, I was looking for a sharp pencil. But some of this stuff, for people like you and I, it's fascinating. And we love the, you know, the dynamic, the interpersonal relationships, Jason Sane talking about Star Wars and that sort of thing. It's, you know, it's stuff that... I guess we have to search for stuff like that to, or otherwise we would be going insane at some of those meetings. But I think it's going to be good.
Real people, right? I mean, these are real people that have these real discussions about real important issues. And you know, I think there so much gets characterized or caricatured, if that's even a word, about these people because they become these almost. I've said it before about Senator Berger; they almost become like mythical creatures. Because we have these images of them. But, I mean, this really happens, all this stuff. Like you said, we converse with these people. We know them. We know their stories behind. And so it is fascinating, the dynamics of how they make it work. I mean, I've always said, you know, people, why can't these folks get along well? I mean, think about it. These people are leaders in their communities. They're leaders in their businesses. It's like putting 170 CEOs, you know, Pepsi, Coke, American Airlines, Delta, all these people in the same room and get them to all agree on something. I mean, imagine that. And that's what the legislature is. And so it's not easy. We expect and want easy solutions and all getting along together, but it's not. And so we kind of have to realize that when we think about the process.
No, I think you make an excellent, excellent point. And you remind me of something that happened when I was working at the General Assembly years ago. The Republicans had just taken the majority, and I was working for Senator Tillman, actually, and we were fielding a whole bunch of calls from people who were complaining about this or that. I don't even remember what it was, but at the end of a particularly long period of time where I had fielded a bunch of these calls, I didn't get ugly, but I asked the caller, I said, let me ask you a question. If you had been elected and you came down here and you found yourself facing nearly $3 billion budget deficit, what would you do? And they very quickly said, and they hung up. So it's not as easy, the point that you're making. It certainly is not as easy as people who, you know, tend to sit back and criticize may want it to be.
Well, it's easy when you don't have to come up with a solution to criticize problems.
Yeah.
And that's not to either side, because both sides of, and this is even North Carolina, this happens all the time. But that's the world we live in now, and, you know, social media amplifies that. And you know, part of it, too, is these public officials have to be so careful. And I'm not saying what, you know, some of these individuals have done recently on social media is right or wrong, but, I mean, you can't even kid about things anymore. I'm not saying they were kidding either, but it's just everything is so under the microscope these days that you just have to be incredibly careful.
Well, we can thank Commissioner Causey and Senator Kravick for keeping our week interesting, can't we?
it keeps us busy.
And have you heard what she's going to do with all the lard that they've been sending to their office?
No, I have not. But it is a good day to be in the lard business, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people still talk about lard. But maybe a big fish fry or something.
Yeah, exactly. Tim Boyev, you're the best. Thank you, as always, for being our guest on What Matters in North Carolina. And we'll look forward to talking to you next week when perhaps there'll be some controversial bill that we can take apart.
Indeed, my friend. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Well, it's good to joke around with Tim Boyev, but you believe Senator Kravick? You know, she said something about people, they had these people that were marching and something about their brains. They wouldn't have enough. If their brains were lard, they couldn't grease a small skillet. And, you know, come on, folks. Oh, my gosh. I'm so offended. I'm so hurt. Really? Anyway. People are looking for opportunities to you know, get involved with being able to attack a public figure. It's like, oh, wow, this is awesome. And, you know, people sending lard to her office and whatever. You know, we've had Senator Kravick on the program, and she is absolutely doing a very good job as a senator here in North Carolina representing the people in her district. And so she tweeted out something trying to be funny. Oh, well, it's the end of the world. You know, I'm surprised they haven't called for her to, you know, step down or something. I mean, my gosh. The same with, you know, Commissioner Causey. Of course, his remark was a little bit more over the top than hers. But I guess depending on the way you look at it. But, you know, it's okay for people on the left to swear and, you know, say hateful, ugly things. But let somebody who's on the conservative side do that. Oh, my gosh. You know, the hypocrisy is so thick. It's just so, so real. And it's really kind of, you know, I don't know. It's hard to deal with. It's just really so blatant. Now, get over it, folks. Really? Well, thank you for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. If you'd like to send me a tub of lard, you can do that. But I really wouldn't know what to do with it. Tim said something about a fish fry, but I don't have any fish. But I like to fish. And so maybe this weekend, if it's not going to be too cold, I am rambling. But I just can't get over Senator Kravick and the way that people have responded to her. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to What Matters in North Carolina. We would love for you to follow us on Twitter at What Matters NC. You can follow me at Mark Shiver. I'll be glad to follow you back. And we can talk about lard and fishing and all that good stuff. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/What Matters NC. And folks, do yourself a favor. Share the program with your friends and family. We've had some great guests this week, including Senator Phil Berger and also Representative John Hardister, Representative Holly Grange, Representative Sarah Stevens, and the list goes on and on. So Tell your friends and family about the show. They can find us at freedomactionnetwork.com or in the iTunes and Google Play stores as well. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you have a very, very good weekend. And be sure to stay tuned Monday. We have got an amazing guest for you right here on What Matters in North Carolina.